Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of KleptoCast, the podcast series from the Hudson Institute's Kleptocracy Initiative. My name is Casey Michelle, and my guest today is Zorka Milin, a senior legal advisor with Global Witness, which is an NGO focused on global transparency efforts. Zorka is also a visiting fellow with Yale University's Global Justice Programs, as well as the Information Society Project. With Global Witness, Zorka has written about the ongoing saga of Teodorin Obiang, the vice president of Equatorial Guinea, who is currently facing trial in Paris on counts of corruption and money laundering. So, Zorka, it's great having you with us today. For listeners unfamiliar with Mr. Obiang, could you give us just a quick rundown of his history and some of the allegations surrounding him?
Thank you, Casey. I'm thrilled to join you as well. The Obiang case is one of the most iconic anti-corruption cases that our organization has come across in several decades of looking at this problem of corruption around the world, especially resource-related corruption. Mm-hmm. Equatorial Guinea, where Mr. Obiang is holds the position of vice president and is also the son of the ruling president, is one of the routinely ranked as one of the most corrupt countries in the world, and is also very rich in oil and timber and natural resources. Mm-hmm. And the paradox is that despite this wealth, the people of Equatorial Guinea live in devastating poverty, the majority of them below the extreme poverty level of $1 a day. And so what accounts for the gap, we're starting to get a glimpse of that through the case that started recently in Paris, the trial that is ongoing there, as well as the previous proceeding that we had here in the U.S.
It seems that there is, despite the estimated wealth surrounding Mr. Obiang, it doesn't seem as if his case in Paris or even in the U.S. necessarily a couple of years ago generated that much coverage, at least in the kind of mainstream press. Can you tell us, Zorka, just a bit about how the current trial in Paris came to be and why you view it as a historic event?
It is the trial in Paris is a hugely historic event because it is the first time that we see a sitting official, a senior government official who is still in power, being accused and held to account for these crimes of grand corruption. So that's never happened before. We often see, you know, deposed dictators, you know, brought to trial on charges of corruption or other crimes. But this is the first time that the French authorities are going ahead and proceeding against someone who still holds power. And so that creates some legal wrinkles around issues of immunity. And the significance of the trial is in establishing a precedent that these kinds of crimes are so grave that the principle of immunity should not be used as a shield by defendants to, you know, to de facto account to impunity and you know, escaping justice for these crimes altogether. So it's as I mentioned a minute ago, we did have a case in the U.S. A couple of years ago, which was a civil case that was focused on certain assets that Mr. Obiang had, including a very lavish mansion in Malibu, California, and some very nice cars and a private jet and, and Michael Jackson memorabilia, et cetera. And so that case was focused on the assets, not on Mr. Obiang personally, which is the focus of the French case. So it will be a truly historic legal precedent that that will be set as a result of this proceeding where, you know, we already have these principles as a result of the Nuremberg trials that certain crimes against humanity and genocide, et cetera, are so grave that, you know, you cannot use immunity as a defense. And so now we are starting to see something similar on this corruption and kleptocracy front.
So obviously, I guess Mr. Obiang is not the the only alleged kleptocrat out there, or even one currently sitting in power. What is it about Mr. Obiang and his history and his career and his proclivities, or even the kind of activities attributed to him that makes him the first sitting official to find himself facing trial for these charges. Why is it Mr. Obiang and not some other official in another country, or even another official even in Equatorial Guinea itself?
Well, I think that the extent of corruption that we see in Equatorial Guinea is mm-hmm. just unlike anything else that we see in other countries, and the sums at stake and the kinds of properties, you know, real estate and other assets that are at issue in these cases are just, you know, the numbers are extraordinary. The French mansion that's in a very nice part of Paris is worth around 100 million euros, and the one in California is was forfeited by Mr. Obiang as part of the U.S. proceeding, and the Department of Justice was able to seize it, was worth around 30 million euros. So, you know, these sums are just enormous, and the contrast between the lifestyle that Mr. Obiang leads and you know, the desperate poverty of the people of his country is also quite stark. So, you know, it is one of the most extreme and vivid cases of brand corruption that we know of.
You mentioned one of his house in Malibu, California, which was forfeited a couple years ago following a settlement with the DOJ. That house was purchased via a U.S.-based shell company called Sweetwater Malibu. Now, I was wondering, Zorka, if you might be able to just touch on some of the systems and institutes in the West. Obviously, Mr. Obiang didn't act in a vacuum. I was wondering if you might be able to touch on some of the systems and institutes in the West that Mr. Obiang used or even abused to further his gains and stash his wealth abroad. Were there any kind of banking systems, any kind of regulatory systems that he was able to access that helped his pursuit of this wealth?
You're absolutely right. I mean, obviously, corruption is not something that, you know, it's not a one-person crime. It takes a lot of helpers to make it happen. And at the most obvious level, it's a two-way street. There's, you know, companies, oil companies and timber companies that made the payments to Equatorial Guinea that were, you know, looted by the ruling Obiang family. Mm-hmm. And that includes a lot of Western companies. It includes you know, for example, when it comes to oil, which Equatorial Guinea is very rich in oil,
right.
Exxon is the main company that is active in the country. So, you know, although Exxon is certainly not, there's no evidence that they have violated the FCPA or any of the other relevant laws.
Right.
There is I think not necessarily a legal question, but a kind of question of moral responsibility that Exxon has been investing huge sums in this country while everyone in the world knows, you know, what kind of regime rules the country. So that's where I would start. And in addition, as you pointed out, these people like the Obiangs, they require the help of Western banks and Western lawyers and Western shell companies registered in Western countries. That's another part of it, certainly. So, I think it's an important part of the story.
Right.
And the trial in Paris is of course focused on Mr. Obiang's personal responsibility. He's the only defendant.
Yeah.
But through telling that story, I think some of the aspects of this whole network of helpers and facilitators will come out.
Sure, and that leads me into, Zorka, into my final question, just as it pertains to the trial in and of itself. Given your own expertise on the case and given your own prior writings with Global Witness, what are some of the aspects of the case that you are looking forward to most, either in terms of revelations, either in terms of assessments of his wealth? Are there any aspects that you're looking forward to seeing more than others?
I think just the fact that this is going to trial and that the story of grand corruption in Equatorial Guinea will finally be told in an open forum, in a public and official forum, is enormously important. Our organization and, you know, others, other anti-corruption activists and investigative journalists have been investigating and documenting this over the years. This is the first time that, you know, this story will have the official imprimatur. And even though we don't necessarily expect Mr. Obiang to end up in prison, because he's being tried in absentia, by the way, he's not actually there. You know, he has lawyers who are defending him, so it looks unlikely that he will end up in prison, at least for the moment. Sure. You know, nevertheless, the message that these kinds of acts cannot go unpunished mm-hmm. is a very, very powerful and important one to send mm-hmm. to dictators and kleptocrats around the world.
Mm-hmm.